Here's a look at business and financial news from the Marketplace Morning Report. Good morning, I'm Deborah Beer in Los Angeles. Americans were making more in the month of May, and they were spending more. The Commerce Department says personal income from wages, salaries, and all other sources grew by 0.4%. Personal spending rose a strong 0.8%. A lot of that money went to buy new cars. Auto sales rebounded after a slump in April. Wall Street was expecting less in the spending category. Bond prices fell on the news. Not a bad turnaround for the NASDAQ composite last week. It finished Friday with a hefty rally, up more than 1.6%. But the Dow Industrial slumped. It fell 50 points on the week to 56.54. More on the week on Wall Street and a look ahead from Dallas stockbroker and business analyst David Johnson.
Just when you think you've got everything figured out, we're going to have summer doldrums, light volume, higher interest rates, the death of the high-tech stocks, there'll be a flight to the relative quality of the Dow. At least that's what it looked like anyway. Then on Thursday, the Dow started slipping and the NASDAQ started bouncing and the bond market started roaring ahead. And that means this ought to make for a pretty interesting Independence Day shortened week. It'll also make for an interesting economic calendar. Personal income, along with the purchasing manager survey and construction spending, are due today. The leading economic indicators of new home sales on Tuesday. Factory orders come Wednesday, unemployment Friday. And then, of course, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee starts meeting tomorrow and finishes on Wednesday. From KERA in Dallas, I'm David Johnson for Marketplace.
On the overseas markets today, Tokyo stocks fell 75 points, or 0.3%. The dollar's mixed in early New York trading. It's changing hands at 109.65 yen. Planet Earth's king of personal wealth is Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft. For the second straight year, Gates tops Forbes magazine's annual list of the world's richest private individuals. He's reportedly worth $18 billion, that's with a B. His fortune grew by about 40% from last year, according to Forbes, largely due to Microsoft's soaring share price. Microsoft's stock is up 56% since January. Second on the Forbes list is Warren Buffett, the Omaha investor, with $15.3 billion in personal worth. Foreign companies investing in China have long had a difficult time taking their money out of the country, thanks to stringent rules governing exchange rates. Well, not anymore. Today's the first day companies can freely buy and sell foreign currency at designated banks all over China. The reform is another step towards full convertibility of the Chinese currency. From Beijing, Jan Vandermade reports.
Good morning from Beijing. Since China opened its doors to the outside world in 1979, foreign enterprises faced endless hassles in taking their profits out of the country. Profits made in Chinese currency, the renminbi yuan, could only be changed for hard currency at artificially low rates. Many foreign companies merely used their profits to pay the salaries of locally hired employees, pay local expenses, or reinvest the money. Shareholders didn't like that, and it kept foreign capital out of China. For the last couple of months, Beijing's experimented with allowing foreign businesses to take their profits out of China at full market rates. The experiment went on in four cities. Nothing dramatic happened. Money didn't flood out. China's currency stayed pretty stable. So these experiments will now widen starting today. By the end of the year, China's currency will be fully convertible, at least for liquid assets. Restrictions on other financial movements won't be lifted before the end of the decade. In Beijing, I'm Jan van der Made for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Deborah Beer. This is the Marketplace Morning Report, business and financial news on PRI, Public Radio International. Join us later today for a half hour of Marketplace. Here's David Brancaccio.
Parents who don't pay their child support are a national problem. One unusual solution, bonds that would provide immediate support for kids and would later be paid back by wages and judgments against the deadbeats. Join us later for a half hour of Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Deborah Beer. The number of people taking classes and even earning degrees over the Internet is growing. The typical online student is older, professional, and self-motivated. As Marketplace contributor Deborah Monroe discovered, the Internet is helping colleges, large and small, expand their enrollment.
Champlain College Enrollment 1500 is one example, offering associate or professional degrees entirely online to students flung far and wide in the rural area of Burlington, Vermont. In Poughkeepsie, New York, Marist College quickly jumped online when several hundred of its graduate students lost their jobs when IBM downsized. Many of the students, just one class shy of getting their master's, moved out of state in search for new jobs. Marist responded by offering the classes over the Internet. And it's not just small colleges, it's just about all of them. Dennis Foley, a novelist who teaches a UCLA writing course on the Internet, says these classes have enormous potential.
You can go through the entire inventory of course offerings in a university system as big as, let's say, University of California, and you can go down the list and say, which of these courses can be taught over the Internet? Yes, 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 yes.
And yes, 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 the Internet is also a money saver. A university need only bill the students and pay the instructor, eliminating expenses like classrooms, chalk, light, and heat. And while Internet students might not always be seen, they are beginning to be heard, as Professor Jerry Yule quickly found out as he helped the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana launch an online calculus course.
During this time, we asked the students to come forth and give us any criticisms at all, because we said we're doing something altogether new and we're bound to make mistakes. And the students uniformly, 60 students, came and said the lectures were an unfair imposition on their time, that they could get the material very easily through our media without the lectures, and to please stop requiring lectures.
Which is precisely what Yule and his colleagues did, dump the lectures, never to reinstate them. The online calculus course uses a program designed especially for the computer, including text, graphics, animation, even sound. Students learn the same way researchers do, through discovery, visualization, and experimentation. Ken Ford, director of the Institute for Human and Machine Cognition at the University of West Florida, says this is an example of a good Internet course, of which there are many. But there are some bad classes out there, too, ones where universities merely shovel tired old lectures or pre-existing textbooks onto the Internet and charge students the same amount of money.
The pressures often come from groups like the State Boards of Regents that are facing just rapidly escalating educational costs and diminished willingness of society to pay for education. And they see this as a possible silver bullet.
Internet technology also means students lose out on face-to-face intimacy with their teacher and classmates. But as UCLA writing instructor Dennis Foley says, this isn't always a bad thing.
Everybody can email back and forth to the instructor. And you've got all week for your at your leisure and at the students to be able to ask and answer questions. And for those students who are normally shy in a classroom setting and might not ask a question, they'll ask it over the Internet.
These two shy types may soon be betrayed by the same technology that allowed them some anonymous comfort. Dennis Foley predicts within a year, universities will begin handing out laptop computers with teleconferencing equipment, enabling students to actually see their instructors while talking to them. In Los Angeles, this is Deborah Monroe for Marketplace.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by KUSC at the University of Southern California. Major financial support is generated by GE and its power systems business, international manufacturers of advanced power generation technology. Because at GE, we bring good things to life. Additional support comes from this and other public radio stations nationwide. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report on PRI, Public Radio International.
Here's a look at business and financial news from the Marketplace Morning Report. Good morning, I'm Deborah Baer in Los Angeles. Americans made gains in personal income in the month of May, and they shared the wealth. Consumer spending rose a strong 0.8%. According to the Commerce Department, auto sales rebounded after a sluggish April. Personal income rose by 0.4%. That's in keeping with this year's pattern of steady increases, according to Cynthia Latta, chief economist at DRI McGraw-Hill.
We've got two things. working to push up income. One is more jobs, and the other is, on average, higher pay for those jobs.
The U.S. economy has created an estimated 1.3 million new jobs since January. It's been a pretty good 6 months for the stock market, too. The Dow Industrial Average has advanced about 10.5% since January. The NASDAQ composite has picked up a little more than 12.5%. Turning to Wall Street on this first day of the third quarter, the Dow's up 16 points. Bond prices are lower. The yield on the benchmark 30-year Treasury is up to 6.92%. The dollar's mixed. A billion here and a billion there. After a while, it adds up to some real money. For Bill Gates, it adds up to about $18 billion, a personal fortune that makes him the richest private citizen on Earth. This according to Forbes magazine's annual survey of billionaires. The chairman of Microsoft tops the Forbes list for the second straight year. Close behind at number two is Warren Buffett. The famous Omaha investor is said to be worth $15.3 billion. As Marty Goldenson reports from New York, a growing number of Asian billionaires are not far behind.
Half of the top 10 billionaires are Asian, according to Forbes ranking. Hong Kong real estate magnate Li Shaoqi now ranks number four after Swiss industrialist Paul Sager. Li bounced a Japanese billionaire out of the number four spot. Poor Yoshiaki Tsutsumi, the transportation emperor, dropped to number seven with less than $10 billion to his name. The fifth and sixth slots went to Tsai-Wan Lin of Taiwan, Think Financial Services, and Li Ka-shing of Hong Kong, the entrepreneur. Of the 447 billionaires that Forbes listed, 123 are Asian, which is not surprising, really. Asia's contribution to the global economic output is rising fast. It was 17% in 1980, 25% today. The U.S. is still home to one-third of the world's billionaires. And the world's richest woman, Lillian Bentancur, heir to the L'Oreal Cosmetics empire. She's way down on the list, only $5 billion. In New York, I'm Marty Goldenson.
Only once in a blue moon or so will you hear a business show mention Mongolia. Well, today there's a bit of news worth mentioning. The former communist state sandwiched between Russia and China held its democratic parliamentary election Sunday, the second since its peaceful revolution 6 years ago. Turnout was impressive. Nearly 90% of the 1 million voters cast ballots. Many of them had to ride for hours on horseback to get to the polls. As Marketplace's Jocelyn Ford reports from Ulaanbaatar, the economy was the deciding issue.
The results were a major surprise for the nation. Voters threw out one of the world's longest-lived communist parties and voted in a democratic coalition. At issue was the economy and alleged corruption. Smukutsu, a 30-year-old psychologist, talked about some of her concerns.
The economic situation is very bad.
Smukutsu campaigned for the democratic coalition, but even she said she didn't want a landslide victory. After 76 years of single-party rule, she says it's important to have a strong opposition to check those in power. The transition from a Soviet-style centralized economy to a market economy has been rough with high inflation and unemployment, but Mongolians voted for even faster change. The Democratic Coalition advocates quicker privatization, and it's hopeful its pro-business policies will attract more foreign investment. From Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, this is Jocelyn Ford.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Deborah Baer. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Join us later today for a half hour of Marketplace. Here's David Brancaccio.
Some New York bankers have come up with an unusual plan. The city would issue bonds backed by judgments against deadbeat parents. Kids would get the money they're owed, and believe it or not, it should be a pretty safe investment for bondholders. Join us later for a half hour of Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Deborah Baer. Well, July is here, marking the start of the second half of the year. And while most newspapers today are totaling up gains and losses on the stock market and for mutual funds, Greg David, the editor of Crain's New York Business, has the economy on his mind. He joins us this morning. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Deborah.
So, are you here with some good news or bad news?
Oh, I think it's all good news. I think the economy is gaining a lot of strength. Inflation is very low. The numbers we've seen are very impressive. And I think we're set for the second half of the year.
Well, so let's talk about the numbers. Job creation has been pretty strong, of course.
During the Clinton administration, we've created about 14 million jobs. In the last month that we have numbers for, 348,000 jobs. Inflation around the country is less than 3% a year. Unemployment is around 5.2%. Those are good numbers, especially when you remember that this economic expansion is entering its sixth year. That's really impressive.
So, Greg, what is the magic, really? Is it one man? Is it Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan?
Well, I'll give Greenspan credit on the inflation front, but no, the credit goes to everyone out there in the country because the consumer is spending again.
Which regions of the country are doing particularly well?
Well, it's pretty broad, but there are a couple places that I want to note, one of which is California, where you are. There's a new study which shows that personal income in California will go up by 6.2% this year. That's an incredible performance. Inflation is 3%, and personal income is going to go up more than 6%. That's a tremendous real gain. And here in the East, we're seeing a lot of benefits as well. New York is adding advertising-related jobs for the first time in a decade because of this consumer expansion. Ooh. While we're not quite as strong as the rest of the country, things are improving sharply here as well.
So jobs are popping up in the advertising business because consumers are spending more?
Jobs are popping up in the advertising business because consumer companies are very bullish and pouring millions and millions of dollars into advertising because they think they can get consumers to spend. You bet.
So I guess Mr. Robert Reich is right about this Goldilocks economy, huh?
Oh, I guess I got to give him one, huh? Well, I will. But there are some risks, and I think I could name three, one of which is an international crisis that changes the whole psychological and economic framework.
Such as?
I don't know. What if the oil supply were cut off? Mm-hmm. Or what if Russia had a revolution? I mean, that's the way you've got to think if you're thinking about such crises. Two, you know, the auto talks in Detroit could result in a long strike this fall, which could dampen economic activity.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is some sign that inflation is back. The Fed went looking in June and couldn't find any, but if they find some later in the year, they just might decide to ratchet up interest rates, which would be another risk that could slow the economy.
Mm. So Mr. Greg David predicts smooth sailing for the U.S. economy through the rest of this year, possibly 7 years of an expansion before we see a downturn?
That's where I'm putting my money, and I've got one more prediction for you, Deborah.
What's that?
Oh, this is good news for Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
All this talk about downsizing and how upset everyone is about the state of the economy is going to disappear by November. He is going to be riding a very strong recovery into that election. And with the other things he's done, I agree with the polls. He looks pretty golden today.
But anything could happen between now and then, couldn't it?
They could, but I'd rather be Bill Clinton than Bob Dole, I'll tell you.
Have a nice 4th of July, Greg.
Same to you, Deborah.
Greg David is the editor of Crane's New York Business.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by KUSC at the University of Southern California. Major financial support is generated by GE and its power systems business, international manufacturers of advanced power generation technology. Because at GE, we bring good things to life. Additional support comes from this and other public radio stations nationwide. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report on PRI, Public Radio International.